anything in the world that is potentially entangling can also be potentially liberating. Correct? So when you read the scripture, you get the impression that when men and women come together, it can create potential problems. But if you look more closely as you read, it also can create many solutions or solve many problems. It all depends on how you use it. And how you use it depends on how you see it, how you think of it. So I think we need to start with a fundamental principle, is that when you become a devotee, at that point in your life, you make an internal shift that everything I do is going to be for my spiritual advancement. Everything I do is going to be for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada, the pleasure of my guru, the pleasure of the Vaishnavas. It's a total shift in how we've lived for millions of lifetimes. From whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do because I want to do it, to now whatever I'm going to do, I'm going to do because it's good for my spiritual life and it will be pleasing to Guru and Krishna. So I think the biggest mistake that anyone could make doing anything is to think, now I'm going to enjoy this. This is going to be for my enjoyment. That's the beginning of going downhill, no matter what you do. Let's take, for example, the chanting of the holy name. If I think I'm going to chant the holy name so I will enjoy, or that people will appreciate me, or they like the way I sing, etc., then I'm completely misutilizing the holy name. Some people chant the holy name to become Krishna. I don't know if you're aware of that, but some people use the holy name to become Krishna. So now you take something which is meant for your liberation, meant for awakening prema, and it becomes the cause of your entanglement in the material world. So it, in a sense, we can say, nothing inherently is material and nothing inherently is spiritual, although obviously the holy name is spiritual, obviously. But depending how you approach it and how you utilize it will determine if it has a spiritual effect on you. So it's the same with marriage. Why do most people get married? I think the answer is easy. They want to be happy, right? You all agree? Nobody looks for someone that will make them unhappy and think and says, you know, I think we should get married because it'll make us unhappy. And that will be good because then we'll become detached and we'll just like end up hating one another so much. And then, you know, I'll end up hating all men. You'll end up hating all women. And we'll become detached. And we'll all go back to Godhead. Nobody thinks that way. Right? Well, some devotees maybe in the 70s thought like that, but I hope you don't think like that. And normally we think, well, I want to be married because I want to raise a family, I need the association of the opposite sex, etc., etc. But the fundamental principle has to be that I'm going to do this because it's going to be beneficial for my spiritual life. And also, it's going to be beneficial for the spiritual life of my spouse. Now, here's the problem. Many people enter marriage thinking, it's going to be good for me. It's going to make me happy. I'm going to have someone who will help me, or someone who will serve me, or someone who will fulfill my needs. And that may all happen to one degree or another. But the problem is when you enter the relationship with that mood, you're setting yourself up for failure, because as a devotee, you don't do anything other than what is helpful for your spiritual advancement. Correct? Yes? How do you say yes in Slovenian?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I got it. I can say that. Yeah.
Yeah?
It sounds quite German.
Yeah.
You know, in South Africa, that's how they say yes in English.
Yeah.
They have also Afrikaans, which is Dutch mixed with a little German.
Yeah.
Prabhu, are you going to Kirtan?
Yeah.
Okay, so I learned a Slovenian word today. That's amazing. Now I can speak Slovenian.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I'm just speaking based on experience. And we have a really big challenge when we become devotees, is because we have Shastra, which paints this very idyllic picture of the ultimate husband and the ultimate wife, like these incredible men who are very, very advanced, very self-controlled, very much men, responsible, powerful, intelligent. And what woman in the universe wouldn't want a husband like that? She doesn't even have to worry about anything. He takes care of everything, and she doesn't ever have to worry that he will ever go off with another woman. He's perfectly controlled. He's a perfect husband, perfect father, devoted. Whether he feels like it or not, he does his duty. That's the man in the Bhagavatam. And then you have the woman in the Bhagavatam. And what's the woman in the Bhagavatam? If she ends up with a husband who's exactly the opposite of that, as could happen, she's still devoted. She's still very humble. She still does what he says, even if he's wrong. She is chaste. She never talks to other men, never thinks about them. She doesn't complain. I've never met a woman who doesn't complain. Have you? Like, that's like, I don't think that exists now in this age. Or a man who doesn't complain. Everybody complains, isn't it? I was just on Facebook, and so many people are complaining because leaders got vaccines. And I'm thinking, don't you have anything better to do than complain about leaders getting vaccines? I mean, your life must be more valuable than that. So complaining is like, it's just very, very common, right? So now, if I get married and I hold my wife to the standard of Devahuti, well, I'm not going to be very happy with her because she's going to fall short. Like, you know, Prabhu, you haven't fed me anything more than two bananas today. Stop complaining. Be like Devahuti. She lived in the forest on roots and fruits. What's your problem? You know, that would be weird. Right? Okay, I'm exaggerating, but there is some truth to what I'm saying, if you understand where I'm going, right? And the husband, you know, he's like not getting up so early, and the wife's like, you should be getting up at 3 a.m. You should be like Kardama Muni. He did austerities, and he was, and you're eating so much, and you're getting fat, and you should be austere like, you know, like him, and strong and powerful and disciplined. You know, we will drive one another crazy, right? So when you go into a marriage, one of the things that can really create huge problems, or once you're already in it, is setting your expectations for things that are impossible. I don't think any man's going to find a Devahuti. And I don't think any woman's going to find a Kardama. So we have to enter into the relationship realistically. And, you know, someone just wrote me and said, you know, we want to have the ideal Vedic marriage. And when they said that, I thought, you know, this sounds funny. And I'll explain it. And I thought, if you're trying to have the ideal Vedic marriage, you'll probably end up divorced in 3 days. Because where are your ideal Vedic samskars that you groomed growing up? You didn't. You grew up in Slovenia or wherever you are, right? The samskars that you What is going on today in the world? Like, let's look around. Are men lazy? Yes. Are men lusty? Yes. Are men having many relationships before they get married? Yes. Are men sense controlled? No, most men are not, right? Ladies, this is the pool from which you're going to choose a man. Now you might say, but he's a good devotee. And say, I'll say, yeah, he is a good devotee. But don't forget what he was before he was a devotee. Those are, you know, odors that still remain in the barrel a little bit, right? And ladies, were you raised to be like Devahuti, that whatever your husband says, you just do, even if he's completely wrong? And even if he's like, who was that other one, Sukanya? And Sobari Muni, and was it Sobari Muni? One of those. He had this like horrible disposition, and his wife was always, yes, yes, whatever you say, I'll do it. And he was just nasty, and she was glorified because she was so sweet. And he was like old enough to be her grandfather, and she was so sweet always. Like that's not normal. And so if that's what we expect from one another, and that's what it means to have a Vedic marriage, all I can say is good luck. And I'll see you in divorce court in 3 days. It's just not going to work that way. So you have to be realistic about your expectations. We have to be realistic about ourselves, what we can expect from ourselves. And our partners have to know who we are and what we are and what they can expect from us. And we have to know what we can expect from them. And then from there, we can get down to what I think is the most important thing, is serving and respecting one another. Now, some of you who are married may have this experience. In the temple, you just want to serve. In the temple, you're just like super humble. Your guru comes, you're like just serving, super humble. And then you get home, and it's a little different when you close the doors on your house. Have you, any of you noticed that? It's kind of not always the same. And people say, oh, I love your wife, she's so humble, or I love your husband, he's so kind and sweet. You're thinking, you don't want to say anything. You're just like, yeah, you don't know what he's like at home, you know. So I've seen this happen a million times. Like, we get the philosophy, I am servant. We get the philosophy, compassion, kindness, integrity, forgiveness, empathy. We get that. We understand that. We apply that. And then we get home. And sometimes or often it changes. Any of you had that experience? Like, you get home and it's like, you go to the movie theater and then the movie comes on. You go, I thought I paid for this movie. And you get home and you're seeing another movie. So what's happening here? Well, I think in some cases, they tried to shoot for the ideal Vedic marriage and they missed it by like 6,000 miles or however far you are from India. And they were just kind of ended up with themselves. They're not so perfect selves. What I think the best thing is for us, if we want to say Vedic, okay, well, what's Vedic? Serving your spouse. Is that Vedic? Yeah, well, that's beyond Vedic. It's universally what every good marriage has in common. Serving your spouse. Why are you in this marriage? To support your spouse. Why are you in this marriage? To fulfill their needs. Why are you in this marriage? Well, I can tell all the men one of the reasons you're in this marriage is to learn how to be humble, because your wife's going to tell you things that are wrong with you. Because she's not going to be a Vedic wife. Vedic wives will never tell you what's wrong with you. Better have a non-Vedic wife and hear what's wrong with you so you can improve. So she will definitely tell you what's wrong with you. Probably every day you'll hear something, right? And is that good? Well, men don't like it, but is it good? Well, if she's right, it is good, because it teaches you humility. It teaches you You know, maybe you have to apologize sometimes, you know. Is that good? It is good. So we have to enter marriage with that mood, that it's going to be difficult, there's going to be give and take. It's not just going to be about me and my desire and what I want, but it's going to be about what is best for both of us in our spiritual life. And then you might ask, well, Mahatma Prabhu, how would you analyze a successful marriage? I say, well, if you both end up going back to Godhead, that was a successful marriage. You know, you could say, we had a happy marriage and we became who knows what in our next life. Well, that was not successful. We had a difficult marriage, but through it all, we became Krishna conscious. Wow, extremely successful, right? Now, some of you are saying, but if the marriage is not good, if it's not happy, then maybe I'll be looking for another partner. Like, I won't be satisfied, right? You know, and that's true. So I'm not saying you shouldn't be happy. I'm not saying you can't be happy. I'm not saying that is a material desire. But how are you supposed to be happy in grihastha life? You're supposed to be happy because you help one another practice Krishna consciousness. And then by practicing Krishna consciousness, what happens? You become happy, right? Isn't that what it says in Bhagavad Gita? Susukam kartam avyam. You've read that verse? You become happy doing bhakti? So you and your wife, you and your spouse, your husband, you help one another become Krishna conscious. Presto, you're Krishna conscious, you're happy. If you try to move Krishna consciousness out of it and just try to grab from one another and get from one another and try to be happy, then you'll be one of those statistics. I don't know what the divorce rate is in Slovenia. In America, it's like 60%. You're already, well, we don't know what it is because so many people don't get married. I heard now in Iceland, 70% of the parents are not married. Like getting married is kind of like, why bother, you know? It's just, it's too complicated when you want to leave one another. So we'll end up as a statistic if we just enter marriage thinking, yeah, I will just get from this person as much as I can. So I have a message to the men. And I have a message to the women. Ladies, men don't like to be criticized. I don't know if you know that, but it's like for a man, if it's a choice between being criticized and getting his tooth pulled, he'll definitely prefer to get his tooth pulled. I can guarantee you. Men, you agree? Getting a tooth pulled is less painful than being criticized by your wife. Because men's egos are like, you know, they take up a lot of space. I don't know if you've noticed it. Men have these like huge egos, you know. So for men, like, you know, being right and like, they don't like to be criticized. They really don't. And guys, ladies don't like it when you kind of just ignore their emotional needs. They just like, it makes them feel like you, like they're useless kind of like they don't matter. They don't care, you know. And they don't like to be made feel, they don't like to be made to feel guilty because they like nice clothes and jewelry and things. And you know, if you're a male devotee, you might even think, well, you know, you're a devotee now, so you don't need all that. And so we need to understand one another so we can keep one another happy. We need to make compromises. Even we may think something is not really right, but it's something my husband or wife needs. And we know it'll make them happy. And you might say, but what if it's not Krishna conscious? But the thing is, if we're not happy, there's no platform for having a good Krishna conscious. There's no platform for proceeding in our Krishna consciousness if we're always disturbed, if we're always criticizing and fighting and putting one another down. So sometimes devotees misunderstand this. They think, well, if I want to be happy in grihastha life, it's like sense gratification. No. But being happy is a foundation so you can be peaceful. You want to be peaceful. That's the idea. You know what Prabhupada said when he married his couples? He said, be peaceful. That was his main thing. Be live together, husband and wife, be peaceful. What does peaceful mean? It means now the woman has a man, the man has a woman. Now shanti, 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 everything is peaceful, right? Don't mess that up by fighting, by criticizing, complaining, putting down. You want to create this nice, peaceful environment, happy environment, an environment where we accept one another as we are and we help one another, we serve one another. Then we'll become Krishna conscious. If we lose sight of that, it's going to be a huge problem. If we get too attached to rules, no, you're the husband, you're supposed to be this way. You're the wife, you're supposed to be this way. Of course, that's true. We have roles as males and females that are necessary to fulfill to have a good marriage. But if we hold one another perhaps to roles which are beyond what we can do, it can create all kinds of strange problems. Now, there's an interesting, I don't know if you know this, there's such an interesting thing that happened. Must have happened about 1970. There was a man who got second initiation, and Prabhupada wasn't present. So a devotee had to put his thread on him. And who knows, raise your hand if you know, this is a very unique situation. They were just alone, he and his wife. Well, I guess I kind of gave it away. He and his wife were alone in some country preaching, and he had to get his thread, and she was already brahminically initiated. Who do you think gave him the thread and chanted the Gayatri mantra in his ear? I'll give you a guess. Seeing that she was the only one there, yeah, you're right, it was her. So she gave her husband the thread and the Gayatri mantra. And that same husband, he said, you know, Prabhupada, my wife is more advanced than I am. But the husband is supposed to be the guru to the wife. And Prabhupada said, well, then she can be the guru to you. The guru to the wife means the husband, you know, it's not like, whatever I say is right, and you have to do whatever I say because I'm the guru. The husband should think of it more like acharya, example. He should be an example of Krishna consciousness. But in some cases, that didn't work. So Prabhupada said, okay, well, she can be the guru and you can be the disciple. So we saw this with Prabhupada, that although he preached Vedic principles and Vedic culture, he also adjusted where necessary. And so I'm just warning you that sometimes if you get too involved with stereotypes, stereotypical roles, you can drive one another crazy because your husband's supposed to be this way, your wife's supposed to be that way, and they may not be able to be that way. And so I can tell you one of the great lessons I learned. It only took me like 20 years to figure this out, and you can get it now in less than a minute. After 20 years, I realized my wife is the way she is, and this is the way she's always going to be. I had hopes for something different, but you know, I finally realized that although she's fantastic and perfect and great, there would have been a few things that if they were a little different, I would have liked better. And those few things sometimes I didn't understand. Sometimes I would become impatient or intolerant. And one day the lights went on. It only took 20 years. My brain works slow in the marriage department. It only took 20 years and I finally realized this is how she's going to be, so you might as well just accept it. Wow. And they say women are more intelligent than men. I don't know. It took me 20 years to figure that out. And you're all thinking, well, that's kind of common sense. Why did it take so long? Well, because I'm a man. That's why. And when it comes to marriage, I don't know, women, they say women are less intelligent, but all I can say is when it comes to marriage, men, I don't know if they have any IQ at all. And ladies, you know, the ladies are the ones that have to help the men understand. So anyway, I got some marriage IQ after 20 years. And that was my realization. She's going to be this way. So if you want to have a happy marriage and not put yourself in unlimited anxiety, then just accept this is how she is. Well, but she was very happy from that day on. I never told her. I don't know if she noticed. But from that day on, I don't think I ever said anything other than encouraging, flattering, appreciative things ever again, even when she did something that I thought was not really the best thing. Or just like, oh, well, that's what she does. It was amazing. And that's what it means to be married. And so my realization is that as a married, as a young devotee, we have all these high expectations. So my wife, she's supposed to be like Devahuti. Is my husband, he's supposed to be like Kardama. And one day you wake up and realize, I don't think so. Not even close. And then you start to have to accept them as they are, as devotees. And there you are, to serve, to support. That's what it means. Now, if you're not married, here's another problem. Oh, this is a big one. Religious movements are full of problems. Have you noticed that? Religious movements have problems that non-religious, like sometimes people think, you know, if you become an atheist, it solves all kinds of problems, like all your guilt goes away and this, you know. It's like, well, if you got shame and guilt, you know, try atheism, you know, you won't have any. So you know, sometimes we become a little fanatical and our spouse is not as fanatical as we are. And that's very common. It's so funny. I've noticed, like, the fanatical wife somehow ends up with the lazy husband, or the fanatical husband ends up with the lazy wife. Never the fanatical husband and man and woman end up together, or the lazy man. It's like, I don't know, Krishna's playing jokes on us. But I've always noticed this, right? And then another thing happens. The fanatical husband finally marries the fanatical wife, and 5 years later, he's a lazy bum, and she's even more fanatical. Sometimes you see that happen, right? So you have this additional layer in the marriage to deal with. How do you deal with that? You have to be able to accept, okay, this is the reality. This is how it's going to be, right? It's just, there's nothing I can do. This is what it means to be mature. Now, how can you say that? Look at Srila Prabhupada. His wife was hardly a devotee. His wife was selling his books to buy tea biscuits. That's pretty bad, isn't it? And Prabhupada raised that family, and he went through so many difficulties for them. Yeah, not easy, right? So we become married. Sometimes we get married young. We're not so realistic about it. We're a little fanatical about it. We have high spiritual expectations. And then sometimes we don't even understand ourselves. This is a problem. I think this is one of the problems that I see that really concerns me. Oh, no, I was going back to another point, but it relates to this. So let me go back to what I was remembering. Yeah, so you're a young devotee, and I don't know if you've seen this with young devotees, but they hit a certain age, and they kind of, it looks like they're like going crazy. Have you ever seen that? Like, they were fine, and everything was good, and then one day they're like mad, and you finally find out, you know, Prabhu, I can't control myself. I have to get married. I'm going crazy. There's so many beautiful women around the temple, and it's like, I can't even go to the temple. It is, you know, it's like, okay, calm down. Or the same thing's happening to women, you know. You know, I'm getting near this age where I'm getting old and I don't have any children and there's no men in the temple. What am I going to do? You know, have you seen that before? It kind of happens, you know, in the late 20s, early 30s, you know. Have you seen that? So I've seen it like maybe a million times. You know, it's just quite normal. So don't you think it's funny? Like, if I asked Krishnadas Brahmachari, you know, it was 20 years later, why did you get married? And he said, because I was at the point where I couldn't go on another day and I need to get married. That's probably not the best reason to get married. And definitely, and his wife says, why did you marry me? Was it my beautiful blue eyes? Was it the fact that I could sing kirtan so well? Was it the fact that you see me giving classes? Go, oh, no, none of that. I was going crazy. I needed a woman. Like, not a good reason to get married. Right? Have you seen that before? Any of you? Or vice versa? So my point is that when you enter a relationship, your consciousness is going to have this huge effect on this other person. And if you're just getting married because, you know, you're at that age where if you don't get married tomorrow, you could destroy something or somebody, it's not very considerate of that person, is it? Like, you're coming into this relationship and your consciousness is going to have a huge effect on this other person, isn't it? So I think this is one of the most underlooked realities. It's just like, you know, I'm looking for a guru. Who's the right one? Who's qualified? Who's the best? And you choose one guru and he writes you back a letter and he says, what makes you think you're qualified to be a disciple? You know, it's like, total shift, you know. The whole time you're just looking, who's the best guru? Who's number one? Who's the right one for me? Who inspires me? Who knows the most? Who sings the best? Who's going to come to Slovenia? You know, you have your whole checklist and you haven't even considered, am I actually qualified to be a disciple? Have you seen that before? Like, we have our whole checklist who the guru is and no checklist for qualification of a disciple. So it's like that, you know, like, who's the perfect spouse for you? I got my whole checklist. I should be this tall, this education, this much money, from this country, this color hair, this size, they should know at least 400 shlokas. You know, you got to go down the line and say, well, what's your qualification? You know, we really need to look at what we are bringing to the marriage, because we can't really mess up another person's life if we are not healthy, if we can't contribute. And this is extremely important, because my whole initial point is when we get married, we're generally just thinking, what do I want and what will make me happy? And so we see someone and go, oh, I really like that one. You know, he's smart, he's handsome, leads good kirtans, you know, this, that, good cook, this, that, and the next thing. You know, checked all the boxes, he's the one. Yeah, well, what about you? What about your boxes? Check your boxes also. So this is something I would, for all of you who are or are not married, doesn't matter if you are married, check the boxes if you are married. What are you contributing? How are you contributing? Because how you contribute is creating the dynamics in the relationship. You can have this amazing partner, but you can create hell if you don't know how to act properly. I think that's obvious. Somehow or other, this gets neglected in our need. So we have this problem in ISKCON. We hold people, you know, don't get married, it's bad, it's entanglement, you know, you'll come back as, you know, you go to hell and you'll embrace a hot iron woman, you know, we have this whole stigma about marriage. So the brahmacharis are like, you know, every day it's okay, today we're going to do it, you know, I made it through today, tomorrow's, you know, just like struggling every day, right, till they're like 29 and it's like you ever fast, you know, you're trying to fast for 40 days and you get to like day 12 and you just like faint or something. So they're like, you know, the day before they're going to faint, it's kind of like, oh, maybe I should get married, you know. And so they've, you know, had like 15 years of trying to put marriage down and try to hold it off. And now they're like a total wreck. They've never been prepared for marriage. They think it's the worst thing. Women are like, you know, just so bad. And this is a huge problem, isn't it? And then, you know, they enter the marriage with all kinds of like, well, I guess I have to do it because I can't, you know, can't make it otherwise. And, you know, women are less this and that anyway, you know, I'll tolerate it and, you know, whatever. And then they get married and it's like, Oh my God, I actually have to work 9 to 5. Ooh, I didn't really think about that. And my wife, like, she needs like 8 times more clothes than I do. I mean, I have 2 Kurtas and 2 Dhotis, and I'm doing good. And now the rest of the closet is filled up with her stuff. Like, ah, I didn't know women were like that. You know, it's like no preparation. It's just like, you know, it's like a shock. So if you're going to be married, and even if you are married, it's essentially important to understand what you're doing and understand who you are, so that you can be in the best possible consciousness when you get married to make it work, make it right, and accept it as it is. You know, many people get married and they had like made some assumptions about what it's going to be like. You ever see that picture in Bhagavad Gita? I don't know if it's still there. It has the couple and they're chanting and the demigods are throwing flowers, you know. So I think when they get married, they think, yeah, that's what's going to happen. We're going to have a nice farm. You know, the kids are going to be running around and demigods are going to be showering flowers. And, you know, it's all going to be fantastic. And maybe for some people it will be. But even if it's like that, there's obviously lots of challenges. And it's not like that for everyone. So when I got married, I was first married at the age, I think I was 22. Yeah, I must have been 22. I had no idea. And I was a temple president. I had no idea what I was doing. I was temple president, and there was a brahmacharini there, only one. And they're all saying, "You're the president. You should get married. Temple president should be married." I'm saying, "Really?" Oh, yeah. I think none of them wanted to get married, but they were all attracted to her. So it was like I was the guinea pig. You know, well, if you marry her, then it solves the problem. We can be peaceful, you know. So I got married, and wasn't exactly the way I thought it was going to be. And I realized I had no experience. I had no, I didn't know who I was as a person. I didn't know much about women, what they're really like, what they need, why I say something that upsets them. When I say the same thing to a guy, and he just laughs. You say the same thing to a woman, she punches you in the nose. Like what happened? I don't know these things. Nobody told me. And nobody told me what it means to be a man. You know, I'm just a young guy out having fun, you know, totally irresponsible. More irresponsible, the more fun we have, right? And then we get married, and it's the word responsibility, and I see what the marriage is like. This is not easy. And so Prabhupada had to write me a letter because I couldn't do it. I was like, I don't want this. Like I was Krishna conscious, then I got married, and now I had no idea it was like this. And Prabhupada, be responsible. Be responsible. You know. So it was like we had to grow up. We were like 8-year-old boys who had no idea what it means to be a man. So if you're going to get married, make sure you're a man. Make sure you're older than 8. And if you're a woman, make sure you are emotionally mature, balanced. Don't choose a guy because he has big muscles and nice tattoos. There's a lot of really good guys out there. Unfortunately, there are a lot of really bad guys out there, and probably they're the ones that usually have the tattoos and the earrings and the big blue eyes. Yeah. So be careful. You need to know what you're looking for in a husband and a father. Because the guy you marry or the girl you marry is going to be the mother or father to your children. So it's not just your husband or wife. It's also, you know, you look at this guy and he's like amazing. And then you ask the question, would I like to have this guy as a father to my children? And all of a sudden you realize, I don't think so. He's not ready for it. You know, it changes your vision when you take the reality. Of course, you can't say that once you're married, because you just have to help him. If he needs help, help him. But these are just some things that I've noticed. And please don't hold one another to the ideal Vedic paradigm if they aren't able to do it perfectly, which most people are. But be realistic and keep as your barometer, are we grounded? Are we living in a relationship where we can make progress? Are we living in an environment that the children we bring into will become Krishna conscious? Well, they'll be in a peaceful environment. They're not going to see their parents arguing. Do we have time for the children? Are we willing to make sacrifices? All these things. You know, a lot of times Prabhupada said the purpose of getting married is to raise good children. So raising good children is a sacrifice. They come first above everything. And you want to create an environment which is conducive. You know, want to hear something funny? My wife and I never argue. Well, actually, that's not true. We have one argument a year, I think. Or I don't remember. Maybe we've gone 3 years without an argument. And they usually last about 90 seconds, if we have one. The reason is because I learned you never win an argument with a woman, so I realized, you know, years ago, that's like a waste of 90 seconds. I could use that for eating a sweet ball or something, but argue with a woman, forget it. But I remember something interesting. Once we were, you know, we're not really arguing, but discussing something, and my daughter, whenever we would do this, you know, like that yearly 90-second argument, she would come in and stop it. She would say, "Stop this now." She'd be like 5 years old, 6 years old. She'd stop it. "No arguing. We don't argue in the house. You know, talk about it, but don't argue." You know, or she'd say to me, "Why are you giving mommy a hard time?" Or she'd say to my mother, "Why are you giving daddy a hard time?" She never experienced arguments. So it was so rare that when it came up, she just was like, "What are you doing? You can't do this." She'd stop it. Because we created that atmosphere in the house that it's like it's so foreign to her. She's like, "What is this? This never happens." You don't want to create an atmosphere where arguing is normal, and that's what your kids grow up watching. And they're just going to, you know, kids tend to do what their parents do. And you will often see that when the parents argue a lot, the kids will argue with their friends a lot because that's how they learn to communicate. So it's not just you. It's not just you two coming together to be happy, but you two coming together to raise balanced children. When we were young, isn't it funny when I say, when I was young, you're all looking at me. You were young? You don't look young. You were young? Like you were 20? Isn't it, you know, when old people say when we were young, it's like, "Oh, you were never young." Isn't it like that? Can you imagine? I was 19 when I became a devotee. Could you imagine that? I was actually 19, yeah. So, when we were young, we had this idea, right? That our children are all going to become pure devotees and they're going to go to Gurukul when they're 5 and do austerities and learn Sanskrit and go to Mangalartik, and that was the mood, right? I think some of you know what happened. The unfortunate history is that they got the spiritual, but the material, the connection with their parents, the love, affection, they didn't get it, and they came out very, very disturbed, very unhealthy psychologically, a lot of them. So the pendulum shifted for a while in ISKCON, and we weren't even worried so much about the spiritual. We were just worried about having normal, balanced children that didn't have problems because of parents who neglected them or mistreated them. So what I've seen in my own spiritual, the work that I do helping devotees, is that if you don't have stability materially, psychologically, emotionally, you can't build your spiritual life on the foundation. It's not strong enough. And so we did that a lot with kids, you know. We gave them this amazing spiritual foundation, and materially, they didn't have a foundation, and it didn't work. And a lot of those kids actually turned against Krishna consciousness. So when you come together, man and wife, one of your duties is to create this ideal environment where your kids can grow up strong materially, be happy, balanced, satisfied, then naturally, if they're in the right association, their spiritual life will just blossom. So I want to end now my comedy routine. I hope you laughed a bit. Marriage is very funny. I can't talk about it seriously because then it's too depressing. So it's better to laugh at it, right? You know what we say in America, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. So, of course, I don't think it's healthy to speak negative about marriage, and I know a lot of people speak negatively about marriage, and a lot of devotees do. And there are many funny negative things about marriage, but marriage is an ashram. To speak negatively about an ashram, that's not right. You know, marriage is an ashram, which most people need, and most people need to learn how to perfect that ashram because it's going to be necessary to go through it and do it right as a necessity to become Krishna conscious. So we can take questions now if there's time. And
Thank you so much.
I covered the topic the way you wanted me to, but that's how it came out today.
Thank you very much, Mahatma Prabhu, for this kind, inspiring words of wisdom on the marriage topic. Yes, we're going to take a couple of questions. Имам гоче до кашно прашане за Махатма Прабуя, лахко кар директно праша преко микрофона.
Someone's going to ask their question, or you're going to read it?
Or
we're asking.
We're asking if somebody has a question.
Yeah, we have one.
We have one question which says, which is the main ingredients for being responsible?
Do it even if you don't feel like it. Do what's right even if you don't feel like it. And, you know, responsibility is going to be different for husband and wife, but for the husband, it's providing financially, providing security, providing guidance as needed. Responsibility for the wife is usually in the home, taking care of the children. She may have to provide financially also. I think also, like we were saying, be responsible for your own psychology so that your problems don't become your partner's problems. Don't negatively impact your partner. Guys, women do not like weak men. Write that on your wall. What do women like? Women like not only men who have big muscles, but have strength, determination, are responsible, but also have kindness, compassion mixed in with that. So women like to be protected, and so that's a man's responsibility. You know, if there are financial problems or he can't make proper decisions or he wastes money on stupid, frivolous things, like that doesn't work. So also when you're married, you can just ask your wife. You say, what is responsibility to you? What do you think my responsibilities are to you? It's what, you know, it seems like common sense, doesn't it? When you want to know something about marriage, you would ask your spouse, but we often don't do that. But spouses are great marriage counselors because they can tell you what they need, what they look for. For me, sometimes my wife is like super excited if I can fix something. I'm not a handyman, so I think that's why she gets excited, because I actually fix something. It's quite surprising for her. But just the fact, you know, that women are not always the best at fixing things. So, you know, it's a little thing, but it's like, you know, I expect you to fix things. Not that I break them, but just when something doesn't work, fix it. And it's just like, oh, you fixed it. It's like, that's amazing. You're a real man, you know. Today I said, you know, I go mountain biking because it's such good exercise, but my wife doesn't like it. And I said, you know, I wish they were like a little pill, you know, that would make you more of a man so we could go mountain biking. And she said, well, I wish there was a little pill that would make you like gardening, because she likes gardening. So today I picked 6 carrots out of the garden. and washed them and brought them in. So sometimes you just have to ask your spouse, what do they mean by responsibility? How do they define it? What do they want? Yes. We have more questions?
Yes, we have another question. Bhaktin Iris is asking if two spouses have had a lot of traumas in their early childhood, and this is still somehow outlining and affecting the dynamics of the spouse's relationship, and sometimes there would be harsh words, even yelling, and there'd be moments when they can still be kind and loving to each other. And the question is it still advisable for this kind of couple to have children before they clear this trauma?
I would say in general, they should work on it to get it under control as far as possible, because they're going to get angry at their kids also. And, well, let's turn the question around and just ask yourself, would you like to be a child of yourself? Mm-hmm. If you were the mother or father, would you like that to be your mother or father? And I think that will answer your question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But if, you know, and also it's like, what do you mean by working on it? You're actually like getting help, professional help? As if you have traumas, traumas are like deep samskaras, you know, they have to be worked on. They don't just go away after a Bhagavatam class, generally. I mean, it could happen. But generally, if it's very deeply ingrained in you and wounded and from childhood, you got to work on it. You got to go through it. And arguing is just, you know, you're trying to express needs that are unfulfilled and you're not expressing them in a healthy way. Or maybe you're not even aware of your needs and you're just getting frustrated. So these things, you know, it's better. I mean, you know, in our country, we have what's called foster parenting. And you bring a kid into your house and they stay with you for a few years. And you have to go through a course and you have to be qualified to be a foster parent, right? But to have a baby, no qualification necessary, at least by the government standard, but... You know, I think it goes back to the point that there has to be material stability for spiritual stability, and your goal as a parent is to help your kids become Krishna conscious. And if they're not grounded materially and happy materially, that's going to be hard.
Thank you very much. We have two more questions. Paramanand Surya Prakash is asking, Hare Krishna Maharaj, Lord Rama and Mother Sita are considered to be ideal husband and wife, but we see there were problems before the birth of their two sons. Kindly comment on this.
Yes. If God has problems, what speak of you? It's... You know, enter marriage with realistic expectations. Maybe, who knows, you know? We just don't know. But the Prabhupada's point was, look at it, if you're going to make a decision to do this, then you just be responsible. You know, the guys are thinking, I'll get married so I can have sex and just enjoy. And then after they get married, they realize, actually, prostitution is much better and cheaper. And that's why there's the joke. Why, not a joke, it's a saying in India, you know, why keep a cow? You can just go to the store and buy the milk. So then it becomes like that. It's such a hassle to keep a cow. I just go to the store, buy the milk, no cow. So if I can go to see a prostitute, why do I have to keep a wife? So you know, you have to be aware of why you're getting married, what are the positives and the responsibilities of it. And then you'll be okay. And even Lord Ram, you know, Prabhupada said, look at all the difficulties Lord Ram had to go through. So, you know, it's kind of a warning that these things are, you know, going on.
Okay.
The guys, you know, men are like, oh, let's get married and have sex. Well, yeah, it's a little more complicated than that and way more expensive than you think. you have to deal with so many things. And so don't think I'm going to get married and have sex. Think I'm going to get married and become Krishna conscious. I'm going to get married and raise Krishna conscious children. And I'm going to get married and I'm going to learn how to be more tolerant, learn how to be more kind, learn how to take feedback. All these things you're going to learn. That's what it's about. And if you don't like responsibility and you don't like feedback and you don't like difficulty, then don't get married, because that's part of what it is. And I think everyone who's married will tell you. But it's, if you do it right, it's worth it. It'll help you tremendously. If you do it wrong, you will suffer. Suffer like a dog.
Thank you very much. We have a couple of more other questions that I will try to gather. One person commented that scriptures never speak of divorce. Kindly comment on that. The other person is asking, Anandini is asking, what are the reasons for the divorce? And Bhakti Ma and Yashoda Dular Prabhu are asking how to help each other in a way not to not to put ourselves in a role of a guru, not to be superior or inferior, but and maybe endanger each other's equality, but more to act like as an equal spouses, mm-hmm. in a kind, loving way. So these three questions.
The first question was, what does scripture say about divorce?
Scriptures never speak of divorce. Could you kindly comment? And the other one is, what are the reasons for divorce?
Actually, Manu Samhita does in some cases. Mm-hmm. You know, and Prabhupada kind of takes an aspect of that and says that a woman is not obliged to serve a man who's not following the regulative principles. It doesn't mean she won't, but she's not obligated. So if she wants, let's say her husband's eating meat and this and that, cheating on her, she might just say, okay, forget it. I'm not going to serve you. I'll live somewhere else. If she wants to, it's not sinful or against Shastra. So that's one point. Also, if a woman is being abused and she's being damaged psychologically, emotionally, I have seen that the longer she stays in an abusive relationship, the worse she gets. So, you know what we're... I don't think we're talking about separation, we're talking about divorce, because Prabhupada had agreed when some couples couldn't get along, he'd say, okay, then separate. You know, he just saw it was like, it's useless, it's hitting a wall. He didn't want them to divorce because that just means, oh, it doesn't go well, let's do it again. And he's saying, well, you know, the whole point is to give up sex, so why, you know, marry, divorce. Now, that's the philosophy. Now it's time to talk about the reality, because I think what you're all probably noticing, if you've been in ISKCON long enough, is there are two things that are simultaneously going on, philosophy and what actually we're able to do. So as we know, not every devotee is able to stay married in a very difficult relationship, and sometimes they do remarry. And there are cases in which Prabhupada, he didn't stop it. I don't want to say he approved of it, but he could say he tolerated it. Again, the bottom line is, what's going to help your Krishna consciousness? Now, we don't want to encourage divorce. It's really bad for the children, obviously, it's bad for everything. But sometimes staying together is even worse for the children. Because let's say the woman's being abused. The children living in an abused home, it destroys them even more than the person who's being abused. That's just a fact. It's been studied. So what I would say is, if the relationship isn't good, the first thing you want to do is go into marriage counseling with professionals, because in many, many, many of the cases, the reason it's not good is because you don't really know how to do it properly. And you can learn to understand the other person better. There's exercises and things you can do to help their relationship. So like with anything, you know, a business going bad or health going bad, do everything you can to try to save yourself before you just say, okay, forget it. The second question, was it, did I answer the second one or is it different?
These two questions were related to divorce, and now we have another question. How to help each other in a relationship in a way not to make each one of us inferior or superior as the role of a guru, and act more like in an equal
like
way,
friends,
in a
like
lovely,
friends, right?
loving way.
Yeah, yeah.
As partners.
Well, it sounds like inherent in that question is you're coming in with these two, with this Vedic role model. The man's up here and the woman, I don't know, she's kind of below the screen here. Or the man's here and the woman's like in. But, of course, that Vedic model meant here's the woman, they both go to school for 7 years. Then he goes to Gurukula and she just stays here and stays at home. And then when they get married, he brings her up through education. So he's in the superior position. Of course, nowadays, education-wise and other ways, that's not true. But I think the real important thing is for the couple to decide on what model they would want, they feel is going to work best for them. So if the model of friends equals sharing, you know, like who should make the financial decisions? Is there a right and a wrong way? Well, maybe if you go to the Bible, it says the man should. I don't know. Maybe it says that. Or maybe it says the woman should. I don't know. But is that right for you? What if you're an accountant with, you know, 6 degrees in accounting and your husband never got out of high school? Maybe you should make the decisions on spending money. And you grew up in a wealthy family and he grew up in a poor family. So, you know, the problem is if you get into too many stereotypical roles, you may make bad decisions. So you really need to decide together how you want to deal with one another. And although this is a joke, there's truth to it. The men who were raised in the Brahmacharya ashram or who were raised on a diet of many sannyas classes, sometimes they just think they're better and smarter. And it's hard to get that out of their system and hard to listen to their wives when their wives sometimes know better. Any of you guys experience that? The dreaded Brahmachari disease or something like that? I don't know. We have to come up with a name with it. I definitely experienced it. I mean, I sat through hundreds of classes belittling women. So then I get married and I think, well, you know, obviously I'm smarter, I know everything, so you just listen to me, I'll make all the decisions. And then she sees me making all kinds of mistakes and she says, you know, this is not working for me. You're not smarter in everything. So we need to, you know, discuss. And so if he's humble and he realizes that, he'll say, okay, well, okay. And so things can naturally evolve. I just see it as respect. You respect the other person's feelings, opinions, when you make decisions. And, you know, a lot of times my wife will want something and I think, we don't need that. But I don't say anything because she like really wants it, you know, and she'll go out and get the money for it and buy it. And I'm like, okay, if that's what you want, you know. Of course, I've been married 27 years. If it was up to me, we still wouldn't have any furniture and I'd still be wearing the same kurta I had 27 years ago. So that's me. But, you know, she's not like that. So, and I understand she's not like that. So when I see something's important to her, I just, yeah, go, do it, get it, you know, because it's important. And that's something I learned from being a fanatic brahmachari to being a more reasonable husband. It's just being sensitive to the needs and desires and opinions. The nice thing about being married is you get the opinion of the opposite sex because the opposite sex doesn't see things the way you do. So sometimes, you know, you need that, like the female angle or the male angle, right? Or like women know that a lot of times they get upset and the guy's like, no problem, we'll take care of it, don't worry. And like, really, you can take it? Yeah, yeah, no worries. And they just calm down. Or the guy can't see something and his wife's like, don't do business with this guy, I don't trust him. Really, really? Just don't, trust me, he's going to cheat you. Sometimes they just know, you know, they have that sense. So it's, you know, I think it's maybe a question of a little deprogramming, I don't know if this sounds offensive, a little Vedic deprogramming may help your marriage. I don't know. I just see when you get in these like stereotypical roles for people that we're not like, and we're trying to be like them, but we're not. It's like me trying to lift 300 kgs. It's like, why would I try to do that? Because that's what a strong man can do. Yeah, well, I guess I'm not a strong man, so I can maybe lift 50. I don't even think I can lift 50. I don't know. Maybe bench press 50. So it's just, you have to be realistic.
Good. We have another question. Hare Krishna. This is from Bhakta Danilo. I heard that people oftentimes are supposed to drop all expectations to the other partner. And could this could expressing our expectations bring more clarity to serve one another better? Is it actually good to express our expectations to each other while entering in a relationship and marriage? Could especially, you kind of comment on this? Yeah,
especially before marriage, it's essentially important. Mm. Because, you know, you tell your spouse, I want to live on, I want to live in the middle of the city on in a high-rise condo on the top floor. And I want my office to be across the street in that other high rise. And I want to be the CEO of that company. And your wife is like, well, the wife-to-be is like, you know, well, I was thinking we could get some land and just raise some cows and grow our own vegetables and live a simple life. Yeah. So you got like two extremely different expectations. The time to be really clear about the expectations is before you get married, because that may not work, you know, or she's saying, you're saying, I want to go on farms. He goes, well, you know, I was thinking of getting a PhD and staying in the city. And you're saying, but, you know, we don't have much money, you know. It's like, and she'll say, well, you know, you'll just have to work. And your whole dream is to live on a farm. And so these things need to be clarified. But it's true what you say. Once you're married, those things also change and they need to be clarified. And really, the goal... My wife is a marriage counselor, and one day she said, actually, if you want to simplify what makes marriage work, is that each spouse should just be trying to fulfill the needs of the other. Like, whatever your need is, your wife is trying to fulfill it, and whatever her needs are, you try to fulfill. And then you ask, if you don't know, I say, what are your needs? I want to fulfill them. You know, this is so. And then you work on that. So that's ultimately what it comes down to. And fulfillment of needs, that can be done in unhealthy ways also. So have to fulfill, you know. So if you, and what she said is, if one spouse fulfills the needs of the other naturally wants to fulfill the need of the spouse who's fulfilling their needs. And the problem is when it's like, I want this from you. No, I want this from you. Will you give me? I won't do that unless you do this. You know, it's like. And I joke and I go, well, what verse is that? Where did you, what, you know, what Bhakta program taught you that? You know, it's like I was saying, we get trained and then we go into marriage and it's like, everything goes complete opposite. I want this and you don't give me this. And why should I do that? You didn't cook dinner last night. Yeah, but you didn't take out the garbage either. So I'm not cooking dinner until you take out the garbage. You know, what kind of relationship is that? That's like, you know, it's all like rule. You want to live with rules and regulations.